It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska, here atop Signal Hill, where it's 43 degrees. And we're looking for this rain to go on for the rest of the day, tonight, tomorrow, the next day. A high near 45 today. Northeast winds could gust as high as 20. For overnight, we're looking for a low of 41. Those northeast winds continuing to be gusty. For tomorrow, rain is likely, mainly before 1 p.m. Cloudy skies tomorrow, too, with a high near 46. Northeast winds, again, gusting as high as 20. Steady northeast winds. Coming up on the Midday Report, a report from the retail sector in Alaska. Not particularly good. An update on the Matanuska Ferry and its troubles with COVID. A rescue from the Coast Guard Air Station Sitka included mariners and dogs. A report from Andrew Kitchenman about the Alaska House Finance Committee's budget. And a plastics recycler gets a grant. That and more after this.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Federal contractors working for minimum wage will see that pay bumped up over time to $15 an hour under an executive order President Joe Biden signed today. Hundreds of thousands of workers are currently paid at or close to the hourly minimum of $10.95. Jobs, the nation's infrastructure, climate change, the coronavirus pandemic are expected to be central themes in the president's first address to a joint session of Congress tomorrow. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says Biden's been working on his speech for the last few weeks. Vice President Kamala Harris will be there. So will the Chief Justice of the United States, John Roberts. The Secretaries of Defense and State will also be slated to attend, but most of the cabinet will be absent. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is the highest ranking member in the line of succession who is not expected to attend. The administration is announcing new guidance on outdoor mask wearing. NPR's Windsor Johnson reports with nearly 100 million Americans fully vaccinated. The CDC says the risk of spreading the coronavirus outdoors is very low.
CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky says it's now okay for fully vaccinated people to be outdoors in many situations without wearing a mask.
If you are fully vaccinated and want to attend a small outdoor gathering with people who are vaccinated and unvaccinated, or dine at an outdoor restaurant with friends from multiple households, the science shows you can do so safely unmasked.
The CDC says fully vaccinated people should continue to wear masks in crowded outdoor areas like sporting events or music venues. The agency also recommends wearing masks in indoor public spaces such as the mall, movie theaters, or museums. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
The FBI has opened a federal civil rights investigation into the police shooting last week of a black man in North Carolina. NPR's Ryan Lucas has more.
The FBI says the investigation into Andrew Brown Jr.'s death is being conducted by the Charlotte Field Office in close cooperation with the U.S. Attorney's Office as well as the Justice Department Civil Rights Division. The probe will seek to determine whether any federal laws were violated. Brown was killed last week in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, during an attempted arrest. Brown's family and their attorneys were shown 20 seconds of body camera footage that they say shows sheriff deputies shooting and killing Brown. They say Brown was in his car with his hands on the steering wheel when the deputies opened fire. An attorney for the family called the killing an execution. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
The State Department says it's ordering a small number of non-essential embassy personnel to leave the Afghan capital over concerns for their safety. Officials say the departures won't affect the embassy's ability to continue working with the Afghan government. Washington's preparing to withdraw all remaining U.S. troops by September 11th, the 20th anniversary of the terrorist attacks that led the U.S. into its longest war. This is NPR News. At some of the world's largest banks, losses continue to mount from the recent collapse of a private investment firm. NPR's David Gura has more.
Nomura, a Japanese bank, told investors today it lost almost $3 billion from its deals with Archegos Capital Management. That's $1 billion more than it estimated. Credit Suisse lost $5.5 billion, and this also affected U.S. banks, including Morgan Stanley. Last month, Archegos had to sell off stocks after some bad investments. The firm financed trades with money borrowed from the big banks. Now those firms are reexamining their policies, and so are lawmakers. The CEOs from six big banks testify before Congress in a few weeks. David Gura, NPR News, New York.
The coronavirus is surging in Southeast Asia, where the Philippines has topped 1 million cases since the start of the pandemic. We have the latest from NPR's Julie McCarthy.
Hospital beds are increasingly scarce in Metro Manila owing to a spike in coronavirus cases in the Philippines. To contain the spread, the Philippines is barring any travelers coming from India, which is registering more than 300,000 new coronavirus infections a day. Australia, too, has suspended all direct passenger flights from India, reportedly leaving Australian nationals stranded. Meanwhile, Asia's two biggest financial hubs, Hong Kong and Singapore, are re-engaging their travel links with a quarantine-free travel bubble starting May 26th. It's the second major air route in the region to reopen. Australia and New Zealand resumed flights between their two countries last week. Julie McCarthy, NPR News.
This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Linda Mood Bell Learning Centers, with instruction to help students conquer learning loss. Summer programs for reading, comprehension, and math. Learn more at lindamoodbell.com/NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
A Coast Guard Air Station Sitka MH-60 helicopter crew came to the rescue of three mariners and their two dogs after they ran aground late last Saturday night, according to a press release from the Coast Guard. The vessel ran aground in the Gilkey River, and the three occupants made it ashore where they built a fire and kept themselves warm overnight in the 30-degree weather. The Good Samaritan attempted to rescue the stranded party but was unsuccessful. They relayed communications with the Coast Guard Sector Juno throughout the night. The party was rescued Sunday morning. No injuries were reported at the time of rescue. The cost of lumber and other building materials is sky high, and the pandemic has periodically interrupted the supply chain. One inventive Alaskan wants to make lumber using locally harvested material no one wants, plastic ocean debris. The EPA has given Patrick Simpson a $100,000 grant to develop his idea of a mobile plastic waste recycler. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin has the story.
Simpson is a fisherman's son who grew up in Cordova. He expected to become a commercial fisherman too, but the ocean didn't agree with him.
If you have seasickness, you're not going to be a very good fisherman. It just doesn't work out. So I ended up going off to school. I got a degree in engineering at the University of California in San Diego.
Simpson is drawn to the creative lemon into lemonade aspects of engineering, and he's a serial entrepreneur. In the 1990s, he founded a company that made fish counting sonar. After that, he developed an unmanned underwater vehicle. Then Simpson moved into fish waste with a company called Alaska Marine Nutrition.
There, what I did was I went into Cook Inlet and I collected all the fish heads from all the processors and converted them into a food grade fish oil. And sold that in bulk.
He sold that company to his major customer, a Canadian supplements firm. And then one day, he heard a presentation about ghost nets, abandoned fishing nets that float in the oceans, entangling marine mammals and killing fish. The title of the talk was Recycling Fish Nets. Simpson's engineer mind went to work, wondering how the company found them, retrieved them, and then turned them into something useful.
Well, that got me started.
Simpson refocused on plastic waste that washes up on shores all over Alaska and the world. He wants to build a mobile waste recycler that would fit in a 40-foot container or two for easy transport to coastal communities. His current plan is to find material collected in community beach cleanups and intercept it before it goes to a landfill. But plastics recycling is tricky. Plastic isn't one thing. The kind that's used in milk jugs is different than plastic film or rope, and they each have particular properties. Simpson says he can use two major types.
I'm able to take the polyethylene and the polypropylene, and I'm melting those, and then I'm shredding net, nylon, and using it as a reinforcement, the fibers, to create a recycled plastic lumber, and then I'm going to sell that locally.
The lumber isn't suitable for, say, framing a house. Plastic's too bendy for that. But Simpson says it could be made into decking, fencing, or roofing tiles.
The technology's not horribly difficult. It's been proven, and the innovation is the use of the net combined with the melted plastic to create an extruded recycled plastic lumber, and the packaging into this mobile platform.
The $100,000 EPA grant is to help improve his concept. If successful, he may be eligible for another EPA grant worth more. And Simpson's not done inventing. He wants to use drones to find which shores have the most plastic debris. That would help direct beach cleanup campaigns, and it would help locate materials Simpson hopes to put to good use. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
A state ferry remained tied up in Ketchikan with more than 30 passengers and vehicles on board Monday as state officials grappled with a second COVID-19 outbreak among crew and failure in one of the ship's engines. The Matanuska arrived from Bellingham early Sunday and was scheduled to depart Ketchikan midday for ports north with 34 passengers on board and 33 vehicles in the car deck. Two crew members were infected with the coronavirus and taken off the ship last week. The ship sailed again before results of close contacts were returned. They came back on Sunday as the Matanuska arrived in Ketchikan, showing at least one new crew member was infected. The entire crew was then retested Sunday, confirming two new infected crew members on board. One left the ship to self-isolate at home in Ketchikan, while the other lives in Juneau and has remained on the vessel. The Matanuska tried to get underway about 12 hours later, but the starboard engine failed, and the ferry returned to Ketchikan early Monday, where it's awaiting repairs. The Matanuska is a mainline ferry that had $47 million worth of overhaul with new engines in late 2019. It broke down a year ago, leaving coastal Alaska without regional ferry service for more than a month. The Matanuska was scheduled to sail north to major southeast ports, including Wrangell, Petersburg, Juneau, Haines, and Skagway. A second leg to Petersburg and Sitka is also scheduled this week. The Alaska Marine Highway System has not said when the latest repairs are expected to be completed. Alaska's population increased 3.3% in the last decade, according to the official U.S. Census count that was released today. The data were for state populations only. More specific geographic details won't be released until August. As KUAC's Robin reports, Alaska's representation to Congress will not change.
The official census count for people living in Alaska is 733,391. That's 1.3 people per square mile, and the least dense of all 50 states. Alaska gained a little over 23,000 folks in the last 10 years. We still have only enough people to warrant one congressional district. There are five other states that also have small populations and also only get one congressperson. But as of this count, Alaska has more people than the states Wyoming and Vermont, and more than the District of Columbia. At Monday's national release announcement, Michael Cook of the Census Bureau's Public Information Office says regional totals are not being released until August.
The set of data that we've released today is only down to the state level as far as the geography is considered, but there will be more to come and more details to follow as we continue to disseminate the results of the 2020 census.
It won't be until then to examine which parts of Alaska gained or lost population, or more details like age, sex, and race. David Howell is Alaska's state demographer. He uses databases that track birth, death, and migration trends to figure out how many people live in Alaska.
Our estimate for 2020 was 728,903, so like right at 729,000, basically. So a little bit higher than ours, about 4,500 higher.
That's half of 1%. He says he's happy that his research and the census numbers are so close.
Always would like to be closer, so we're looking forward to seeing the more detailed data so we can see where is this population that we might have missed. Are they in group quarters? Are they in the Matsu? Are they in Western Alaska? When we get a little bit more detail in the data, we can dive into this a little bit more.
The 2020 census was greatly challenged by the pandemic. At Monday's release announcement, Dr. Ron Jarman, the Census Bureau's acting director, recalled that the nationwide count started in Alaska.
The count began in January of 2020 in the small Alaskan village of Tuksuk Bay. On March 12th, invitations to respond to the census began to arrive in mailboxes across the country. Less than a week later, states across the nation began to impose stay-at-home orders. Immediately, we knew we needed to adapt.
The census postponed the door-to-door follow-up for months. In Alaska, broadcast advertising and social media asked people to fill out their census forms. Census officials say in spite of these setbacks, they think the count is accurate to within 1%. When regional totals are released later this fall, the state's five-person redistricting board can begin to look at Alaska's 40 legislative districts to see how they might be redrawn based on population shifts. The total U.S. population, by the way, is 334,735,155. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
In the wake of Alaska's three-year recession from 2016 to 2018 and the COVID-19 pandemic, the retail sector in Alaska has been seriously hurt. According to Alaska Department of Labor numbers released this month, retail jobs in 2020 plummeted, losing over 2,500 jobs last year alone. One of the exceptions to the retail dive, though, was Kodiak. Kodiak still lost a few retail jobs through the pandemic, about 8 out of nearly 500 in the borough, or just over 1%. But Kodiak fared much better than other coastal communities. Yakutat, for instance, dropped over 12% of their retail jobs, and the Bristol Bay area lost over 15%. Why did Kodiak lose fewer retail jobs during the pandemic? The Department of Labor thinks it might have to do with the nature of Kodiak's retail sector, which is dominated by what have been deemed essential stores in the pandemic, grocers, general merchandisers, and building supply stores. And several of Kodiak's small retail businesses have seen modest success with online sales. You can read the full report in the April issue of Trends on the Alaska Department of Labor website or at kmxt.org. Demand for COVID-19 vaccines is dwindling in Juneau. More than 61% of the city's eligible population is fully vaccinated, so the city isn't planning any more mass vaccination clinics. As KTOO's Bridget Dowd reports, Juneau residents who still want to get their first shot can now turn to small, pop-up clinics instead.
When Juneau officials started offering mass vaccination clinics for the COVID-19 shot, demand exceeded supply. They were often giving out more than 1,000 doses per event. But there's been a clear tapering in demand. The most recent first-dose clinic was the city's last. They had capacity for over 1,000 doses, but only gave out about 300. Now any Juneau organization can apply to have the shots come to them. Robert Barr, Juneau's emergency operations chief, says applicants can submit a set number of people who they know will want the vaccines or set up an event on a walk-in basis.
Well, there are factors that go into that. What's the potential for walk-ins at the space? Have we done something recently in that, sort of small geographic area around the site?
Two churches hosted pop-up clinics on Monday. Brad Perkins is the program coordinator for Resurrection Lutheran Church. He says he thought offering vaccines during their month-end food pantry was the perfect opportunity.
The last Monday of the month is usually our busiest because people are running out of money, so we'll see at least 50, 60 people today picking up food. So we had a pretty good guess that we could get a number of people to come through and do this.
Jess Brown is the wellness coordinator for the city and hospital. She was at the pop-up clinic helping patients schedule their follow-up appointments.
It's been really exciting to get some shots in arms. I've had people come in and they are actually in tears because they're just so grateful and so ready to be past this whole last year.
Brown says public health is all about meeting people where they're at.
Not everyone feels comfortable in different locations, and so we might have a group that just feels more secure and comfortable getting it here, and it feels like a more trusted process.
Kyle Asai Lau received his first shot at the church and says it gives him peace of mind.
I did grow up with asthma, so I know I was a high-risk factor patient, so getting the vaccination would just make myself safer along with the people I live with.
And for those still worried about getting the shot, he says, just go for it. In Juneau, I'm Bridget Dowd.
The Alaska House Finance Committee proposed a very different plan from Governor Mike Dunleavy's on how to spend $1 billion in federal aid. The committee plan released on Friday would free up roughly $400 million by using the American Rescue Plan Act funds to replace state revenue. That money could be spent on permanent fund dividends, roads and other capital projects, or other items. Dunleavy had proposed spending much larger amounts than the committee in relief for the tourism industry, other businesses and infrastructure, and replacing a much lower amount in state revenue. Committee members can propose amendments on the budget as of Monday. When the committee's done with the budget, a full House will reconsider it. The Senate is working on its version of the budget.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Seafood has become a new habit among consumers. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. Online at alaskaboat.com.
Americans have gotten the seafood habit 1 year into the COVID pandemic, and it's not likely to change anytime soon. In surveys, grocery tracker Numerator found that new buyers of fresh seafood said they were 78% more likely to have formed a seafood habit. Fresh salmon was the biggest seller in March, boasting sales of $184 million. In other good news for fresh, Seafood Source reports that retailers continue to invest in a much broader assortment. The average number of items per week per store increased from over 42 in March 2020 to more than 43 items in March of this year. 14% of new frozen seafood buyers also said they've got the habit. Frozen seafoods continued to dominate grocery sales last month, surging to $340 million. But those who closely track food purchases say they're unsure if retail seafood sales will continue their significant growth. As more people get vaccinated and start moving out to school, work, vacations, and gatherings with family and friends, that could shift more buying to food service, meaning those companies that sell prepared meals to restaurants, school and hospital cafeterias, airlines, and other outlets. However, remote work continues at a high level, and last month, 44% said they'll continue to do so. Also, 45% of younger school-aged children and 52% of teenagers are participating in virtual education only. That means a continuation of more at-home meals. The pandemic also is fueling concerns about sustainability. 80% of consumers internationally and 71% in the U.S. said they're more concerned about the environment, with 28% of American consumers saying those concerns affect their purchasing decisions. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 27th day of April, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 6:27. It will set again at 9:49, giving us 15 hours and 22 minutes of daylight. That would be a gain of 4 minutes and 43 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 61, set in 1990, and our record low was 23, set in 1975. Currently 43. Rainy conditions and northeast winds gusting to 20 miles per hour are expected today, tonight, and tomorrow. We're looking for breaking up and clear skies maybe starting Friday, and clear skies Friday night, sunny skies on Saturday. Then back to a little more rain. Looking at our local district tides, it looks like we have an incoming tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will be at 3:16 p.m. and be an 8.3-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 8:53 p.m. of 0.4 feet. Our next high tide will be at 3:05 a.m. and be 10.5 feet. And our low tide for tomorrow morning is indeed low. It will happen at 9:41 a.m. and be minus 2.4 feet. Significant low tide. If you have some time to do some tide pooling at 9:41 a.m. Over on the west side, your next high tide will be at 3:40 p.m. and be 16.5 feet, followed by a low tide at 9:38 p.m. of minus 0.1 foot. Your next high tide will be at 3:35 a.m. of 17.9 feet. And your low tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 10:09 a.m. and be minus 4.5 feet. Some minus tides. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A front will move across the Gulf through Wednesday night. That's a good synopsis. The weather, though, calling for small craft advisory through Wednesday. Kodiak's east side offshore, northeast 25 right now. Seas to 9 feet for Marmot Island to Sitkanak. For tomorrow, east wind to 20 knots in the morning, should become variable 10 tomorrow afternoon. Seas to 8 feet. Over in the Shelikof and Kodiak's west side, small craft advisory through Wednesday as well. Northeast winds to 30 knots right now and seas to 11 feet, highest over the southern strait. For tomorrow, northeast 25, seas to 8 feet in the Shelikof. Looking at inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays. For Chiniak Bay, northeast 20 right now and seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, northeast 20, diminishing to 10 knots tomorrow afternoon, seas coming down to 4 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, northeast 20 right now and seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, northeast 20, seas to 4 feet in Marmot Bay. Kodiak City Council will hold a budget work session this coming Thursday. It's happening at 6:30 p.m. rather than the normal 7:30 in the Kodiak Public Library Multipurpose Room. The meeting will be open to the public and will be broadcast on KMXT right here at 100.1 and web-streamed from the city's website, which is where you want to go for meeting packets, the web-streaming link, and more information. If you'd like paper copies of the packet, call the city clerk at 486-8636. Coming right up here, April 30th, Friday and Saturday, they're having a 12-hour DC Electric for Vessels workshop. Again, very handy workshop for fishermen and people getting ready for the next season. And again, that's happening 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. starting on the 30th on Friday. A workshop for all beginners, women and men who want to learn the basic theory and practices of direct current electricity aboard vessels. Practice crimping wires, assembling circuits, using multimeters to test your circuit, applying basic safety standards, reading and drawing an electrical diagram, just about everything. If you'd like to know what makes a float switch work or you have a casual interest in electricity, this workshop is for you. No testing at all, just learning. There is a fee for the class, and the workshop is appropriate for ages 14 and up. For more questions, contact Lorraine at 486-1209 or L.E. Stewart at alaska.edu. That number again, 486-1209. Celebrate World Migratory Bird Day is this next Saturday, not this coming Saturday, but Saturday, May 8th. Kodiak Audubon and Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge will host Dave Dorsey and his snowy owl Ghost virtually on Saturday, May 8th at noon. Ghost will be present for the first 15 minutes of the session, so don't be late. Dave will be happy to answer questions after a short presentation. Registration is required for this. You want to go to kodiakaudubon.blogspot.com or their Facebook page for a link to register. For more information, contact Cindy Trussell at 486-2878. Coming up also on Saturday, May 8th, the Spring Plant Sale, the community fundraiser to benefit KMXT. We're going to have veggies, flowers, herb seedlings, perennials, rhubarb, shrubs, indoor plants, anything you almost need to get going with your indoor and outdoor gardens. For more information and to donate plants, call 539-5009. But again, that's going to be May 8th, 12 noon at 1223 West Kuskov Street.
Arctic Care 2021 is coming to Kodiak May 5th through May 13th. Arctic Care 2021 is a no-cost healthcare services program provided by the U.S. Department of Defense in partnership with Kodiak Area Native Association. Arctic Care offers no-cost dental, medical, and optometry services to anyone in the Kodiak community. To learn more, including how to schedule an appointment, go to kodiakhealthcare.org or call 486-9870.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 1220. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.